This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. It is episode number 29, and it's being recorded on Wednesday. It is September the 27th, 2006.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
This woman goes in for a facelift, and the doctor says, "We've got this new method. I put a knob in the back of your head, and every time you feel like you need a lift, you just turn it." She gets the knob implanted and is beautiful for 5 years. But one day she notices a problem, and she returns to the doctor. "I've got these huge bags under my eyes," she complains. The surgeon replies, "Those aren't bags. Those are your breasts." "Ah," she says, "that explains the goatee."
Clinton, liberals, dittos.
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of Vista, my friends, Son of Vista, and welcome! You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast, and it's episode number 29 being recorded on Wednesday. It is September the 27th, 2006, and my name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host, I'm your buddy, I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman pad attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, and I am thrilled and delighted to welcome each and every one of you to what is going to be a guaranteed great, huge show. We got too much show. As Sean used to say when we were back on KSCO in their pre-Anthrax days, sometimes it's 20 pounds of show in a 10-pound sack. Here's what we got going on today. First of all, in the first hour, we're going to be talking with Ken Turetsky. Now, those of you who are aficionados of comedy songs, kind of the Weird Al Yankovic, Red Peters, Kippadotta school, if you will, you know Ken Turetsky. He's been on the Dr. Demento show. He's been on Sirius Satellite Radio on the Howard 100 channels. And later on, his career is going to take a nosedive as he appears for the very first time on Schnauzer Logic. We're also going to be checking in today with Jason Nathanson down in Los Angeles. He's going to continue his review of the brand new television season. A couple of programs have already been capped, as they say. So we'll be talking to Jason about that. We got a very special treat for you. We're going to be talking with Eliza Alfrichtig. Down in, well, it's not really down, kind of back east. Eliza is at Harvard University. We'll be talking to her about what the kids are talking about today. I think we got the phone thing figured out, so we'll have a great conversation with her. My good friend Nancy Nangeroni. I've known Nancy now for over 10 years, I think. Folks who were listeners of this program from Trans FM know Nancy as the hostess of Gender Talk. Really the first national gender sexuality talk radio program on WMBR in Boston. And Nancy's going to be a guest of ours today. And Nancy's going to be doing something very special. Nancy's going to be playing Win John DeCoven's Money. Nancy, of course, doesn't know that she's going to be doing something very special by playing Win John DeCoven's Money. But trust me, she will. She's going to be playing Win John DeCoven's Money with the one, the only, John DeCoven, who is here in the studio. And so let us say, Son of Vista, to Mr. John DeCoven.
Son of Easter, Robin.
How are you?
I'm awesome.
You excited to be playing
Happy
with an MIT grad?
Very excited.
There you go.
This will probably be the smartest person I've played with yet. Well, Doug was pretty smart.
Yes, he was. And acting as official timekeeper, scorekeeper, and gamekeeper, the one, the only, you know, love him, Sean Meehan, Son of Easter, Dr. Meehan.
Son of Easter. This is a momentous task. It's an incredible responsibility to shoulder. I will endeavor to do my best at... At adjudicating this fairly, judging this in a fair and even-handed manner, recording the points as they're scored honestly without bias.
Like Bill Clinton, at least you tried.
Exactly.
So we got that going on today. Plus, if we have time, we might try and track down Parviz. Today is Parviz's birthday. And Parviz is not here. He would rather spend his birthday with his wife. Now,
they just haven't been married long
enough. Yeah, they haven't been married long enough, that's for sure. Happy birthday, Parviz.
Happy birthday to Parviz.
Happy birthday, buddy.
All right, we are 8 minutes, 9 minutes, 10 minutes. We're some number of minutes into the very first hour of Schnauzer Logic. Let's get right to it. We got to say hello, Mr. Kippadada. Hello! Michael Swirling, hello.
Stroke or unload.
Harry Whittington, hello. Confused Mr. Dick Cheney. There you go. We got Whitney Houston. And we got Samuel.
English motherfucker, do you speak it?
Jackson. And we got that woman with the kitty.
I'm in my vagina.
There you go.
I think one of the reasons that Michael is so upset so often is that he hasn't realized that one can stroke and unload. And it creates tension for him. He thinks that it's a one or the other. It's an A or B. That no, it's possible to unite the stroking and the unloading into a catharsis.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's his failure to understand this, to put those two together, to fuse them, that creates trouble for him.
That and anthrax. People don't know. Give us a little...
Well, first thing, this is a big birthday week because Robin had her birthday this week.
That's true.
That's right. We need a happy birthday for Robin.
Happy birthday for Robin.
A little special birthday song we'll play later.
Excellent.
Okay. All right.
But the station that that Robin and I met, both doing programs at, was attacked by a vicious prankster.
Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly. Sam Waterston's all over it. But the station received an envelope containing a mysterious white powdery substance. The station had to be evacuated, hazmated. I don't know if that possibility has been taken off the table. It may have been a kind gift from an appreciative listener.
Exactly.
Or a little something to help.
How was it addressed again? We should get this as an...
A-U-T...
Hyphen?
Hyphen K-S-C-O. And we've been racking our brains. Now, all the media outlets, this has gotten some serious coverage locally.
Yes, you can actually Google KSCO and you'll find an article without the word whack job in it. So that's how you know this is a serious article.
It shut down a major road artery in Santa Cruz. It got all kinds
major
of response.
Major road artery in Santa Cruz.
I know, that's a little oxymoronic, but come on, we're building. Don't undermine
I'm
the
sorry.
Power of the story.
I'm sorry, please continue.
So this is a big deal, but all the media coverage has made a specific point of saying that the envelope was addressed to AUT or maybe HUT, we can't recall now, hyphen KSCO, the call letters of the station.
Right.
And we've all been racking our brains as to what those first three letters might signify, and I'm clueless.
Johnny? Johnny boy?
I would have no idea.
They say that there is the station personnel have a suspect. But of course...
Yes, of course they do.
Well,
Pinkos.
I mean, those letters are going to mean something to them, possibly.
Right.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
This isn't CSI. We're not going to figure it out in 42 minutes.
But apparently, even if it is determined who did this, from what I understand, legally... There's no problem with this.
You can do this.
You can do this.
You can send envelopes full of white powder to whoever you'd like.
In the state of California, at least, there is no law against sending mysterious white powder.
It's terrorism.
Terrorism.
It's terrorism.
It builds tyranny.
It does. It builds tyranny. We have to get the white powder before the white powder. If we don't sniff the white powder over here, we'll have to sniff it over there.
I would be willing to be waterboarded personally, just if it got us any closer to the source of that white powder.
It's
an Arm & Hammer box somewhere. But which one?
And of course, we're glad that no one was hurt because
are
friends of ours. And,
right.
and even
like
those who
people.
We like these people a lot, and even the folks we don't necessarily agree with politically, we don't wish any harm on anyone. Civil discourse is... is the best way, I think, to ultimately resolve all of this. I mean, somebody clearly is looking to get their goat.
Oh, absolutely.
And was successful in doing that. And generating a lot of publicity. Now, I actually think they might have sent it to themselves.
This was the first thing that I said to Michelle. I said, MZ's got to be eating this up. If he didn't send it to himself, he's kicking himself now that he didn't do it years before, that it didn't occur to him, particularly now that he knows there's no legal consequence.
Once a year, he'll be sending himself some kind of household solvent.
That's a great marketing idea.
And you're Mr. You would know these kinds of things. I mean,
I'm going to add that one to the portfolio. If you need to rev up your career, mail yourself baking soda.
It's almost. Was it Morton Downey Jr. who carved the swastika, or who painted the swastika on his head, but it was backwards because he did it in a bathroom mirror of a bus station? Is that right?
He's dead now, isn't he? Isn't the poor guy?
Yes, he is.
Didn't his lungs explode? But
he had lung cancer, unfortunately, from all those chain smoking. But nevertheless.
Yes.
Right? The story was he was attacked by skinheads. In a bathroom, and they wanted to know why the swastika was painted on his head backwards. Clearly had done it with
skinheads are notoriously dyslexic. So,
or maybe they were Buddhists, because you know the
that's right, the Indian symbol.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. All right, here's what we're gonna do. We are we're gonna take a first break really quickly into the program today, because I want to talk to Ken Turetsky. Ken is in Texas, and so we got a couple hour time difference. So what we'll do is we'll play a song that is maybe Ken's best-known song, a little ditty that he likes to call Her Shit Don't Stink, and then we'll get Ken on the phone. We'll come back. We'll be talking with Ken Turetsky. How's that sound?
I love it.
That sounds like a show, doesn't it? I hate when that happens. I will fix that someday, I promise, but not too soon. All right, so that's what we're going to do. So we're going to invite you to stick around. We got a great show. Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, John DeCoven is in the studio getting ready to play around to win John DeCoven's money. He's here. He's bad.
He's actually just playing a round of keep John DeCoven's money.
He's bulked up. He's fighting weight at this point. He's ready to go. You ready to go?
I'm ready to run.
All right. That's what we're going to be doing. All right. So we're inviting you all to stick around. Good show today. We're going to have a good show. Stick around.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
She thinks her excrement has no odor. Some people got it, she got it too. It's just a gift that makes her special. The thing that makes her better than you. Her shit don't stink. Her shit don't stink. Her shit don't stink. Her shit don't. She cuts a fart and calls it music. She says she likes to pump her own gas. But let her smell your fear and it's over. At your funeral she'll be blowing taps. Her shit don't stink. Her shit don't stink. Her shit don't stink. Her shit don't stink. She'll only have a man if he's pretty. Berates him for his zero IQ. you. She makes him change and then she dumps him, because now he's not the man she knew. Her shit don't stink. Her shit don't stink. Her shit don't stink. Her shit don't stink. One day a scientific commission will probe her soul, her body and mind. Try to date her, but she'll refuse them. When it's finished, this is what they'll find. Her shit don't stink. Her shit don't stink. Her shit don't stink. Her shit excrement has no odor.
More fun than flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're 20 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, John DeCoven. What are you getting? Some message from the president there? What are you checking out? What could be more important than being part of this show right now with Penn Turetsky on the phone?
Absolutely nothing.
That's my point exactly.
I have that disease. They call it crackberry or whatever.
What?
You haven't heard of it?
No.
The guys that can't get away from their blackberries, they call them crackberry addicts.
Yeah?
Yeah, ask Ken. I'm sure he's heard about it.
All right, maybe we'll do that. Let's punch down the button here and say, son of Easter to Ken, welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Hey, Robin, what's going on?
So have you heard of this? What is it called?
Crackberry.
Crack what?
Crack.
I'm barely following your conversation.
It sounds like Frankenberry or one of those cereals I had as a kid.
Exactly. Know? All right, well, we'll get back to that nonsense later. Ken Turetsky is, a certainly accomplished musician. And I was listening to his stuff earlier today, sort of in the genre of Alan Sherman, Tom Lehrer, Weird Al Yankovic, our own Kippadotta, who we've had on in the past, Red Peters. Ken performs original Bad Attitude folk and blues-based acoustic comedy at venues in and around Dallas. He's inspired by public dismay in reaction to his first CD, Look What I Made. Ken confidently offered the disc to the radio, and now he is here on Schnauzer Logic. Ken, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for the great intro, reading my bio from my website.
Well, it's some prep, ain't it?
We spare no expense.
Knowing how to pronounce my last name, it sounds like enough prep.
Did I do all right? Is it Turetsky?
Oh, perfect.
Outstanding. The first thing that comes to mind when you talk to anyone who's a musician who's doing comedy music is it's almost like you have to be talented in both areas simultaneously. And was it something that you thought, well, maybe I have to choose between comedy or doing music? Or did you try to do, have you done a lot of straight music first and thought this is something I have an extra talent at?
Well, I wish I was talented in one, you know. You know, comedy music, I grew up listening. You mentioned Alan Sherman.
Sure.
And Tom Lehrer, and those guys were the best. And, of course, nobody really knows who they are anymore. But comedy music is just cool, you know. And my buddies and I in high school were always making up songs. And when I finally got up the nerve to go out and play, I thought, I'm just going to do my thing and people are going to love me. So I think I first hit an open mic in Terre Haute, Indiana. My brother-in-law got me out there. And unfortunately, we went over really well, so I thought that's what's supposed to happen. But it was in Terre Haute. You know, what do they got going on up there?
You know, I think they press CDs out there.
Yeah. But people coming up to me, oh, we never get original music in Terre Haute. So I came back to Dallas and started going up at just open mics.
Oh, my God.
And, well, that's all I had, open mics. That's all I still have for the most part. But so you get up there, and then you find out people don't really want to hear you. And either they're offended, which is good. Mm-hmm. That's good. Or mostly they're just sitting there drinking their beer, and you're wondering, how am I going to get through to them? So I just started addressing the audience, you know, and when people walk in, I'm going, you know, where are you going? I'm not through entertaining you yet. Go, yes, you are. And, you know, just had a drunk woman heckling me, which, again, I think is good. But because it's interaction, you're getting through to somebody. And the bartender's going, don't drive off my drunks, you know, that's my income. But I figure as long as they're sitting there heckling me, they're customers. So the woman's going like, stop trying to be funny. Play some James Taylor. And you know, this club, you know, the club next door, you got the disco music pounding through the wall. And I said,
sure.
That's James Taylor next door. Why don't you go check that out? You know, get off my ass. And he says, that's not James Taylor. And I said, yes, it is. You have to go over there and check it out. But
well, you're reviving. I mean, the folks that you mentioned, you know, Alan Sherman, Tom Lehrer, you required the audience to be intelligent. That they had to be engaged, and they also had to understand a little bit about what was going on in the world. They couldn't. It wasn't really passive entertainment.
No, and I do want to engage the audience. I just want it to be a conversation with them. If we end up having a nice talk for a while, that's great. But I want everybody to understand that it's not really meant for them to sit there and ignore me or hate me. They should, like, be involved.
Right.
You know, that's what's fun when you're getting through to somebody. And I always get through to somebody. I played a festival, and somebody came up to me and said, gee, I didn't know what you were doing at first, but now I get it, and I'm completely offended. And then I took this crap to stand up to comedy clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the same reaction, well, almost the same reaction. A lot of people, as soon as they see somebody with a guitar, they say, don't bring props to my comedy club. This is like a temple. You know, you don't invade our comedy club with something other than just your face and a microphone. But I'm funnier than most of the other people there, and I think so. Again, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but you really want to find a club owner who likes it and is going to book you, and occasionally that happens,
right?
And more often not. But I'm willing to take the abuse.
Well, and I think also the nice thing, obviously, as you're discovering and sort of as we're discovering, is you can now reach your audience even if they're spread far and wide. Now, we're sitting in a studio, and so we don't need to see the audience. As a performer, obviously, you like to feed on the energy of the performer, but people can hear what you're doing on Sirius Satellite Radio. They can hear what you're doing on podcasts. They can hear what you're doing on the internet. They can buy MP3s. They can from your website, which I'll give a plug to. It's KenTuretzky.com, KenTuretzky.com. We'll put a link on our blog page. And so you can actually build an audience for people who are really digging what you're doing, even though you may not be able to see all of them at the same time. Does that make you feel more confident about the experience, or you kind of think, well, if I can't see them, I don't really know that they're there?
Hey, first I got to find your website, right?
Okay.
But yes, all the exposure you can get is great. It's great to have a website, and you can blog or put your MP3s up, and people will come in and see what you got and maybe buy something. That's terrific. Maybe that can become your business. But, you know, nothing beats performing.
In front of an audience.
And getting abused.
Yeah. Now, if you go to the website, there's a photograph of you with a sweet-looking little girl. I'm guessing that's your daughter.
That's my niece.
That's your niece.
Okay. I wouldn't do that to a daughter of mine. Put her in my album cover.
I was going to ask about that because I'm a big fan of this kind of music, obviously, and I dig all the stuff that I managed to pull down today. But this isn't really kids' music.
Maybe not for most kids.
You're kind of like Raffy for adults, I guess.
Yeah, actually, I wrote some songs for my niece to make up for all this horrible, you know, making her pose with, that's a fake poop there for the cover.
Yes.
We should mention the name of the CD is Look What I Made, and the image is meant to be like she's very proud of what she just made, and she's just like in all these ads you see of these kids, and they're holding up an MP3 player or whatever the company's trying to sell, and it's always a wide-angle shot from above.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever piece of crap they're trying to sell to 18-year-olds, maybe. And that was my inspiration for that cover photo.
Well, it all works together. Reading through your bio online, the only amount of research I actually did to the interview today.
You listened to the songs.
I did listen to the songs. That's true. I did listen to the songs. I noted that you have been a journalist. I don't know whether you're currently a journalist or not. Does it?
When I have to be.
Okay. Do you find that people, if they know that you do this kind of music, take you less seriously as a journalist?
As a journalist, no. Well, if I mention or boast about my music thing, they'll say, why are you doing that? Or what, you mean you do karaoke? And they'll say, are you serious? And I'll say, yeah, it's really something that's important to me. And they'll say, well, you know, you shouldn't waste your time with it.
Oh, these are good friends.
But it doesn't, I mean, I had no respect as a journalist anyway, so it doesn't matter,
and,
right?
You need to do what you love along the way, and sometimes
right.
you need to do other things in order to be able to do those things that you love. I mean, I think we all understand that. People listen to the show understand that for sure. Do you write songs all at once and then go and record them, or is it sort of an idea comes to you and then you just go into a studio and do one off at a time? What's sort of the creative process for you?
Well, the EP was recorded. I had the songs, and I met a musician at one of the clubs, and he produced this EP. It took us a month per song, and that was a pretty efficient process. Now everything's gone digital, and I'm finding it's actually harder to get something good down because you get a lot of harsh sounds recording. So unfortunately, although I have tons of songs, my recording output hasn't been all that prolific lately. I put out the Morris the Cat song just recently, and
yes,
Dr. Demento played that.
And we're going to play that. We're going to play that in our next break, if that's okay with you.
Play whatever you want.
Oh, that's terrific. Do you see satellite radio? I know that you're on Sirius. Do you see satellite radio as an opportunity to get more exposure? Clearly, both Sirius and XM have comedy channels. Comedy,
yes,
missing from terrestrial radio almost completely now.
Well, regular radio was bad enough before, but now it's impossible. Dr. Demento held up my stuff for like 8 months just because the Janet Jackson thing happened just after he got my CD. And that that was the excuse for the big crackdown that we're still experiencing.
Right.
So just forget about regular radio.
Yeah, yeah.
And when Sirius came along, I got my stuff out to them very quickly. Fortunately, the comedy program manager was looking for new material at the time. And then Red Peters played
Sure.
her shit, Don't Stink, and that was good. And I hope they'll keep playing my stuff.
I'm sure they will. You're clearly a talented guy. I mean, there's a lot of musicianship behind what you're doing, and obviously a lot of love as well. And then to layer funny premises, kind of jokes into the music, I think that's a talent I certainly don't have.
Well, thanks, Robin. We all have our talents, right? You're an attorney.
I'm still looking.
Yeah.
I just have
Are
to.
You, what, what's that?
I just have to add that I love the sort of the opposition of the comedic lyrics in "Or Shit Don't Stink" with the mournful music. I mean,
thank you.
It is that was a touch of genius. Just
thank you.
Putting those side
people,
by side.
You know, we'll say that your music is just too pretty for those lyrics. I just want to take your music and put some good lyrics to it. And I say, those are good lyrics. Yeah. Those lyrics are, and the music is important, and it's also important that people don't see this as jokey stuff. There's a lot of music out there that's just jokey comedy, but it's not what I do. You know, I really want it to be seen as good music and
it highlight the humor.
I'm sorry?
It highlight the humor of the thing.
Uh-huh.
I think it really set it off.
Yes. Highlight,
and by the way, that's Daria McBee singing background on Her Shit Don't Stink. And Lee Fortune produced it. He'll appreciate the mention.
All right. And we'll put a link on our blog page to the web. It is www.kentoretsky.com. Ken, thanks very much for pointing out your music to us. And
hey, Robin, thanks for playing it. Next time we'll talk NBA if you want.
Oh, we'd love to do that.
Okay.
That would be terrific. I'm going to take you up on that for sure.
All right.
All right, Ken, listen, thanks so very much, and have a great afternoon.
Okay, you too.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right.
I don't think highlight is a word, or although
I think
maybe
it's highlighted,
but it saves a syllable.
But you know what I love? I love realizing that there are insanely talented people out there that I haven't yet met.
Yeah.
I love that. Every time I run across somebody like that, I think to myself, that's a reason to keep going. Because there are all these incredibly talented people out there, and I haven't met them yet.
Right. It's not just Bono.
No.
Yeah. You know, one could easily think that.
Have you met Bono yet?
No, but I know who he is.
Okay.
I've sucked the juice out of Bono.
Right down the marrow.
Exactly. All right, listen, we'll play a little Mars the Cat, and we'll come back. We'll talk with Jason Nathanson. How does that sound?
That's awesome.
I love the
Planet
sound
and a half.
That.
All right, you're listening to Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, John DeCoven, Sean Meehan, and we're all inviting you to cordially please stick around.
Stick around for more Schnauzer Logic.
He was lying on the floor when I found him there. Nine lives cat food in his scraggly hair. I didn't cry, but don't say I'm mean. He was only a cat, but he was 17. Morris.
Morris.
Morris the cat.
Morris.
Well, I found him on the step and went out for the milk. His eyes were like glass and his fur like silk. Was so cute, couldn't turn him away. Now he's made me so rich, I'm proud to say Morris.
Morris.
Morris the cat.
Morris.
He'd act so finicky and he'd prance about. He'd sneer at his cat food and go eat out. But one look at him and I had no doubt. This was some cat, this Morris.
Morris.
Morris the cat.
Morris. Morris the cat. Morris.
Well, I was walking my cat when he caught the eye of this cute little blonde. She let out a sigh. She said, "What do you call this little guy?" Said, "Ma'am, his name is Morris.
Morris.
Morris the cat.
Morris. Morris the cat."
She said,
Morris.
"You know you should be on TV." And I knew she wasn't talking to me. I looked at my cat and he was pleased as could be. Could see his name in lights. Morris.
Morris.
Morris the cat.
Morris the cat. Morris.
He made 30 commercials. They wrote his bio. Folks knew his meow from Maine to Ohio. Invested in stocks and he made big bucks. He delivered his fan mail in semi-trucks to Morris.
Morris.
Morris the
Morris.
Cat.
Morris the cat. Morris.
Started dressing fancy in white tails and spats. Got himself a condo full of female cats. Got so cocky he started chasing dogs. Bought himself a solid gold scratching log. Morris.
Morris.
Morris the
Morris.
Cat. Years he lived it up, played Vegas, ran around. Though the docs told him, Morris, he gotta slow down. He'd just laugh and say, "He gotta do the town." Then the big one cut him down. It was the last meow from Morris.
Morris.
Morris the cat.
Morris the cat.
Well, we came to the pet cemetery on a rainy day. Morris's friends all had a meow or two to say. Then we lowered him down in his favorite litter box with some cans of Nine Lives, chicken and lox. When the crowd cleared out, everything was still. Couldn't say I felt too bad. So I got everything in the will. Yeah, he was some cat. That Morris. Morris the cat.
Welcome back. We're 40 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy, trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman pad attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. www.schnauzerlogic.com. That is the website. Robin@schnauzerlogic.com. That is the email address. We got a phone number. It is area code 206-666-6540. Don't be looking at me and laughing there. Son of Easter.
Son of Easter, Robin.
Son of Easter. We could always ask Parvise. You know, call that and ask Parvise what the number is to ask Parvise.
That's right. I think Parvise is back next week, so we're looking for more questions for Ask Parvise. It is area code 206-666-6540. We're also on the iTunes Music Store. And we're also over on MySpace. It is www.myspace.com/schnauzerlogic. And we're on some kind of dingleberry.com. No, dingle, what is it? What do you have? That dingleberry?
Dingle fever.
Dingle fever?
Crackberry?
That's it, crackberry.
Jason will know what a crackberry addict is.
Will know what a crackberry is. Well, I guess we got to get to our good friend Jason. Hold on a second here. I'm going to have to do a mashup, but I'm not. Here we go. Yeah.
I always just pull those things out of the Captain Crunch.
What?
The crackberries.
Count Chocula.
Yeah. Around the world, from Vienna to Carolina. Sticky fingered Filcher from Berlin down to Belize. Take you for a ride on a slow boat to China. Tell me where in the world.
Version?
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
But that doesn't stop him from sitting in front of the tube and watching. Let us say Son of Easter to our good friend Jason Nathanson. Welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Son of Easter, Robin. How are you?
I'm terrific. How are you?
I'm good, good, good.
Now, have you been in contact with any of the folks down at KSCO?
I have been sent article after article from person after person asking me if I was the one who sent anthrax to the station.
I see.
And no, it wasn't me.
Okay, we're waiting for the denial. Once again, much like the story for Arnold Schwarzenegger, you're burying the lead, my friend.
If people have been sending anthrax, I mean, I've been sending it for years.
What?
I learned my lesson.
That's
I
my
sent the station.
The
oh, yes, that's right. That's right. Give it to me again.
If people have been sending anthrax to KSCO, then I've been sending anthrax for years.
I think actually it would be, if that's sending anthrax, if that's sending anthrax, we've been sending anthrax for years.
No, people have tried to send me some when I was on the air there years ago. But
no, they did not.
No. This was before the anthrax year.
But you haven't spoken to anybody down there. So
I did speak to Rosemary today.
You spoke to Rosemary today?
Yes,
And how's she doing?
She's doing good. She's all decontaminated.
Okay. Once a year, whether she needs it or not.
Exactly.
It's just like a flea dip at that outlet.
Drag her out to the hazmat suit. It's scary stuff. Now, you spent a lot of time in talk radio at some places that were fairly contentious,
mm-hmm.
with some hosts who have been fairly contentious. And although it's hard to imagine anybody getting really upset at Ray Taliaferro, but
it's hard to imagine.
But sir, well, I mean, I don't know. Anthrax.
Oh, people hate his his guts.
People are too weary at that time of night.
That's when you get the crazy people.
I guess.
Between 1 and 5
Yeah, but I mean, Ziegler certainly engenders a fair amount of heated debate, if you will.
Yeah.
Did you guys worry about that when you were at KFI?
Well, I mean, every letter that you got actually physically in the mail, you would worry about, because in this day and age, nobody sends letters anymore. So when you did get a letter, usually it would be some kind of chicken scratch handwriting, and you wouldn't be able to understand it anyway. But I usually opened most of his mail. I never worried about anything.
The plane!
It's never really been a problem.
So we're switching over from driving across country to television, but we're going to make a little kind of intersection, a Venn diagram, if you will, of on the one hand, we have driving across country. On the other hand, we have talking about television, and we got our good friend Oprah.
Yes.
Oprah
this week.
Oprah. So yesterday was the repeat of the finale, if you will, of Oprah's drive cross country.
Well, no, it's just part two.
Huh?
Not the finale, it's just part two.
Oh, there's more?
Oh, there's lots more. I mean, she's I think on the show she's now 3 days into it, and now she's dragged it out over two shows. She's going to keep dragging this out over the next 12 seasons probably.
Have they been spraying for mosquitoes down there? I think I have machine gun fire.
Not that I know of. You hear machine guns? I'm not in that bad part of town.
So, were you on part two?
I actually was on part two.
No!
Yes, I was.
Get out of here!
If you... I sat down yesterday watching the show, and
you're
I knew
full of crap.
She was going to start in Sedona.
Okay.
Which is where I met her. And when I first met her, they were in a supermarket, like a Whole Foods type of place, going around. And I was in the background, you know, lurking during that segment. And I figured the best shot for me to be seen was during that. So I watched that very closely. And they spent like 2 seconds on the supermarket. So I wasn't in there. And then they cut to her and Gail driving out of Sedona. And they're arguing back and forth. And they're going to where they're going to spend the night. And for 2 seconds, they show a shot of her driving, the front of her car. And if you look four cars behind her, you see the van in all its glory driving down the road. And if you go to www.randomshow.blogspot.com, you can see a screen capture.
Yeah, it's not actually www.randomshow.blogspot.com. If you go to that website, you're just going to get an error message.
Really?
Yeah, there's no www, and you fucked me up, too, by doing the same thing. It's just randomshow.blogspot.com.
Okay, well, there you go.
This kid doesn't need anthrax.
And he worries. He keeps saying to me, nobody's going to my site. I don't understand why they're not going to my site.
He's a cyber terrorist.
All right, so if we go to your website, randomshow.blogspot.com, we'll be able to see the photograph of the van. You get a screen capture.
Yep, Trudel the van actually made it onto the Oprah show.
I
was very excited. When I saw it, I literally jumped up off the couch and screamed.
So let me, what's your reason for living now?
Nothing.
Okay.
That's pretty much it. That's what I was looking forward to.
Talk to me about television, my friend.
It's downhill from there. Well, there are some good things to look forward to on television. As we talked about last week, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip had its second show on Monday. And, you know, we're all kind of wondering, is it going to be this great thing that Aaron Sorkin's created? Is it going to live up to the hype? And episode 2 was on, and I got to say, I really liked it. Still some of the problems that we had from last week with Amanda Peet, not really, her character's not really jiving with me. I don't really believe her, and I don't think she lives up to Aaron Sorkin's writing as it was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
But the story is continuing nicely. We have the interplay between Matt and Danny, which is Matthew Perry and Bradley Whitford, is keeping up, very funny. And one of the things, that, as I was watching it, and if you saw this week's show, there was a lot of debate about this one sketch that they were going to do, Crazy Christians, which was the one that was pissing off all the evangelicals.
That's an old Random Show sketch, isn't it?
We've done stuff just like that, yes. And we've pissed off our fair share, although I don't think they'd be... It's not Christian to send anthrax, so I don't think it was any of them.
Okay, I'm sorry. Where are you taping this? Where are you?
I'm in my backyard.
Are you in a flight path? I mean...
You really hear planes?
Are you
kidding?
I really hear planes. I mean, Jesus, could it be any noisier?
Wow, I had no idea.
You're like a stud scud there. I'm waiting to hear. You know, we can hear the sirens now. Soon the skies will be filled with the ack fire that will try to keep the Americans at bay. But wait. Wait, I'm going to have to go inside now.
Suddenly it's 1942 and Edward R. Murrow is broadcasting.
All right, quick, we've got a quiet moment. Say something funny.
No pressure. So on Studio 60, the big controversy was over this crazy Christian thing. And while you're watching the show, you're wondering, are we actually going to get to see this crazy Christian sketch? Or is it just something that they're going to talk about the whole time? And then they end up talking about how they need an opening for the show, and that becomes kind of the focus of the show, this big opening, which is going to show whether the new producers have what it takes to, you know, rock everybody's world.
Right.
And so I was wondering, are we going to see this new opening, or are they just going to talk about it? And one of my biggest pet peeves with a lot of shows, and movies too, is when they talk about some big speech somebody has to make at the end of the movie to win everybody over, or, you know, a job interview or some presentation, and then they never actually show the presentation. And that's usually the writer copping out because they can't create something that lives up to the hype of this thing that they've been building up throughout the movie or TV show.
Sure.
And we actually did get to see the opening.
Yep.
Of the opening skit on Studio 60.
Full production number and everything.
A big old song based on Gilbert and Sullivan.
Yep.
From the Pirates of
the Caribbean. I am the very model of a modern major general.
Right, and it was a whole parody on that. Now, I have a little issue with doing a parody on Gilbert and Sullivan, because in the show they talk about how they're supposed to be so hip and cool and they decide what's hip and cool for the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And doing a parody on Gilbert and Sullivan isn't exactly the hippest and coolest thing that you could think of in the world. But Aaron Sorkin has a big affinity for Gilbert and Sullivan. It came up in the West Wing before, so that's kind of a theme of his.
Okay.
And they did this whole number, and the number was good, but it wasn't great. There were only two or three laughs in the whole thing.
Yep.
And it was interesting to watch, but it didn't really live up to the hype. But I do give Aaron Sorkin credit for writing this thing that you're waiting for the whole show to play out, and he actually gives it to you. And, you know, whether it's good or not, he's brave for actually trying.
Well, you know, I did watch it, and one of the things that I was thinking as I was watching the show is the challenge. It's kind of like what Ken does, right? Which is you have to be funny and then also talented in another way. So Sorkin is writing what is effectively a fictionalized version of a going concern, right? Saturday Night Live. So you have to do the things that make Saturday Night Live successful, both the good things and the bad things, because if the show always sucks, then it'll be taken off the air because the show will be taken off the air, right? I mean, you've got this multiple level of regression here.
Sure.
On the other hand, nobody wants to see them simply making Saturday Night Live, although that's actually a fairly interesting idea. If you just had a reality show where every week they were following around the making of Saturday Night Live, it's got to cost a lot less money than making
Saturday Night Live.
Why aren't they doing that? Why don't we have those reality shows? You know, I just came up with a brilliant fucking idea. It's copyright the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company 2006. All rights reserved. And anybody out there listening, you ought to know that this is copyright.
This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
All right, now it's officially copyright.
Yeah,
sorry.
I think you should mix some genres, like have The Biggest Loser, and you have that, and you follow like Horatio Sands around or something like that.
There you go.
So you get the show, you get the whole mise-en-scene of the Saturday Night Live show production, and you get to watch fat comic actors slim up, and then, you know, I don't know, you could...
He was fired, wasn't he?
Was he?
Yeah,
was he one of the ones
Well,
no, they have that show, Celebrity Fit Club.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are ways to mix genres. Mix and match.
All right.
I thought he was the one who said that he wasn't going to get fired.
I know. I said the same thing. I also said I wasn't going to get cancer. So, see how well that works. What else are you watching out there?
Just quickly on Studio 60, what they're doing is really cool on NBC. If you did happen to miss it and wanted to see it, you can go to NBC's website and you can watch the whole show. It's up there.
Cool.
So I actually
all right.
I watched that.
And a YouTube kind of like presentation. So.
Yeah. And if you go to, I think on Bravo, which is also an NBC
It's NBC Universal. Yeah.
Right. They replay some of their bigger stuff, too, so give you a second chance to catch some of these things.
All right.
Right before Studio 60 was Heroes, a show that I was also anticipating eagerly. It's one of those shows where average, ordinary people all of a sudden discover they have powers, which is something that, you know, pretty much every male fantasy from when you're a kid, you wish, if you read comic books and stuff, you wish that you had power. I still wish that I have powers, but apparently my power is to be unemployed right now.
Power to grow hair.
That too.
Sorry, that was really funny.
It was funny. It was good. That's comedy.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that
Follicle Man.
That was actually, that was a good show too. I enjoyed Hero.
His sidekick. Dander. Where's Dander? Here I am, Follicle Man. Sorry.
No problem. You go off on your tangent.
I'm doing my own thing.
It's your show.
It's stereo.
Art Garfunkel, tragically, was the original Follicle Man. And he went into an early retirement.
So this was very, very hyped. And from the promos, it was hard to tell whether it was a comedy or a drama.
Yeah. And it's pretty serious. I mean, if you watch it, it's not... There's moments of levity, but it's definitely a drama. And it's one of those shows where, kind of like Lost and a lot of the other shows, weird things are happening, and you're going to want to stick around to find out why the weird things are happening.
All right.
And also, Lost comes out next week. That's a show I've also been following.
Is that a big one for you there, John?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, my girlfriend turned me on to it. I'm trying to catch up. I just got done with season one.
Yeah, is this the second season or is this the third season?
Yeah, hello.
No, we're in the third season.
We're in the third season.
So it helps if people are on mic when they're talking on a radio show.
You can't hear John?
No, I can't.
Oh, wait, hold on.
We're going to heat him up.
Oh, well, sorry about that. Can you hear him now?
Over.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Beautiful.
All right, I didn't have him in the mix. I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. You're a professional.
Yeah, the show'll be better now.
Nobody's sending you
in. No wonder.
The show'll be better now.
I just watched 6 hours
of
Lost.
Did you say anything while Ken Zaretsky was on the phone?
No, I think he was respectfully.
Yeah, I said a few things.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Mostly swearing, epithets.
Oh, man. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Which one of us?
All right, there you go.
All right. Well, season three. No, I don't know. I mean, my girlfriend just turned me on to that show. It's awesome.
So. Yeah, Lost is a good one, and it premieres next week. It'll be season three of that one. And a lot of these shows, because the last couple of years I've been working evenings, and I haven't been able to watch some of the new shows. And Lost was one of the ones that I actually was able to kind of pick up. And on my little road trip, I bought season one and would sit in various areas and watch that on my laptop. So that's one I'm excited about. Also, The Nine is going to premiere right after that. Haven't heard too much buzz about that, whether that's going to be good or not.
What's the premise?
It's a bank robbery. And nine people are held hostage for 52 hours, and you're not sure. It sounds like it's going to be some kind of like a Patty Hearst type thing where the captives, you know, try to help their captors.
That's interesting. You know, ever since 24, we've had these sort of short-term, almost British-style mini-series concepts
right.
that can't be sustained indefinitely. But
we're Americans, so we will sustain them for as long as we can till they're horrible.
You know, shows like isn't there a Kidnapped? Is that a show on?
Yes,
that's another one which I watched last week, which is pretty good, and it's on again tonight. But I don't see it sustaining itself for more than another couple episodes.
What about The Class on CBS? Right, that looks like that may almost be gone already.
I didn't even watch that. It wasn't even on my radar.
And on Fox, Happy Hour. Right, there's a couple of shows that I think are already looking at getting the axe. So,
and
Justice, right? That's I'm looking here online, and then Happy Hour and Justice on Fox have already been linked from the lineup.
And what is Justice? Wow. What's the premise there?
It's with the guy from Alias, right? And it's another kind of law firm, and
we do
it our way, you do it your way, have it your way, whatever the hell it is.
Burger King.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a show that I would put on TV. The drive-through camera from a local Burger King.
Speaking of the British shows, The Office, which was, you know, just such a great show on BBC.
Yes.
And it was, you could see it over here, and it became definitely a big cult hit, and then NBC bought it. And I didn't watch the first year or so. And then I started watching a couple episodes last year and when it was in reruns, and it started to grow on me. And I started to really like it. And then that premiered last week also, and I missed that. But I actually made my first iTunes television purchase today.
For $2. Congratulations.
I watched The Office. And it was really easy to do. If anybody's ever thought about doing that, they have a bunch of, they have Lost, they have The Office, a bunch of other shows. You can go and you can purchase the whole season or just, you know, episodes that you missed.
Or you can grab them as a BitTorrent too.
Yeah, but that would be stealing.
Well, how do you do that? Explain that one to me, Robin. I'm not paying $1.99 for an episode.
And the season premiere was last week, and that was really funny. I think they've done a good job with it. It can't possibly live up to the hype of the original, because the original was just so creative and so funny. But
they've taken it in its own direction. I think they're doing a nice job. They've created some unique characters, I think, and that makes a big difference.
They have, and they're focusing a little more on the relationship aspects and things
yes.
like that, because that's
yes.
what American audiences apparently want.
All right.
And it's working. I mean, a lot of the season ending, the finale of that show last year, was about the relationship between these two people in the office, and it was almost spun as a drama if you watch some of the commercials,
yep.
which is odd for a comedy show. But it is working, and they are bringing the funny, and, you know, there's a reason they won some Emmys.
Jason Nathanson, is a weblog is randomshow.blogspot.com. Are you on KSCO tomorrow morning?
I will be doing TV as well. We're going to carry it over. It's gone so well with you. We're
outstanding. We love it. We'll talk to you again next week. Take care, my friend, and whatever you do, for Christ's sakes, don't get a job.
I'm trying my hardest not to.
All right, we love you. Take care, David.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye. All right. We'll take a little break. I think we'll come back with Nancy Nangiarone and maybe play a little Win John DeCoven's Money. How you feeling?
I'm feeling great.
Did you go to the bathroom?
I'm going to go right now.
Now's a good. We're stopped. You ought to go now.
Okay.
Now's the time to
just
go.
Make sure my
Don't make me pull
on.
Over. What?
Right. Make sure my mic's on when I play her.
All right.
Okay.
We'll take a break. We'll be back on the other side. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, John DeCoven. Stick around.
Gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
I want to be famous. I want to wear minks and satins and pearls. I want to be famous more than just any old girl. I want to have eyes as blue as the sea. I want all the people to look at me. I want my own show on TV. I wanna be that girl. I wanna be famous. Eat out at Sardi's, have parties at Spy. I wanna be famous. Go to Paris on private flights. I want to have lovers by the score. Movie producers knocking down my door. This is the fate that is in store.
Talk to my assistant.
I want to be famous.
Famous.
Tabloids will print what I eat. I want to be famous. Who I do will be news on the street. Then when I'm old, I'll have a ball. They'll be shocked that I'm living at all. Bye. of woe. Every morning I'll get high on colored pills, martinis dry, a little weed and just a touch of blow. I want to be famous. To be famous, lonely and alone at the end. I'll end up bitter and ugly and old. Not just my body, but also my soul. But a legend is my goal, and a legend I'll be. When I'm famous, not a whit I'll give for the little people, my own damn kids. When I'm famous, famous.
From the top of the Empire State Building.
Actually, it's a second bedroom with some bath mats taped to the wall.
And broadcasting loud to all time zones around the world in stereo.
It's a medium bitrate podcast. Oh, and it's mono.
This is Schnauzer Logic!
Welcome back. We're 6 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic. We're being recorded on a Wednesday. It is the 27th of September, 2006. My name is Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal. Straightway Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. And we're back with John DeCoven.
Son of Easter, Robin.
Sean Puffy Meehan.
Son of Easter.
You got your headphones at a kind of rakish angle there today.
I do. Well, I like to have one ear exposed because that is the port of exit for the steam and vapor. There'll be some kind of an explosion.
Well, see, mine are nuclear powered, yeah. So there are no.
These old clean fuel.
these
old combustion jobs are they're no good.
You guys know that. A good friend of mine, someone who was really important to me in the early days of both radio and my own gender journey, I guess for lack of a better term, is a friend of mine from Boston, Nancy Nandaroni. Nancy does a show on WMBR in Boston called Gender Talk. It started in 1995, so it's been on for over 10 years.
Wow.
It's amazing to think of something that I think people initially would have characterized as being a very narrowly defined program. You know, I'm sure they had a lot more nasty things to say about it than that, but something that has been perceived as being narrow focus would have lasted for more than 10 years. And I got a press release this morning that this Saturday, the 30th, is going to be the very last episode of Gender Talk. And so, of course, I was concerned that everything was all right, and I called Nancy, and she assured me that everything was just fine, and I asked her if she'd be willing to come on the show and do a little talk with us today, and she said yes. So right now, on our line, with any luck, we've got Nancy Nandaroni and her partner, Gordine McKenzie. Welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Hey, Robin.
Hey, Robin.
How are you doing?
I'm terrific. How are you guys?
I feel like making a little bark.
You know, now it's Schnauzer.
Well, you're having fun in Cambridge, and that's what more can you ask for?
Oh, we don't live in Cambridge anymore, Robin.
You don't?
No, you get your butt up here.
I haven't been there for...
No, we live in Beverly, Massachusetts, Oaks. Which is north of Boston, about 40 minutes, and it's beautiful. We're right near the ocean, and it's a small town. It's got a cool little downtown that you drive through with its own revival theater and stuff like that.
Oh, very excellent.
Punks running around.
Yeah, there's an art school nearby. It's great. And a cemetery, so we're right at home.
Nobody's running around there, though.
The cemetery?
Yeah.
and all the goth art students.
Excellent.
So, how you guys doing?
We're doing terrific. John DeCoven, say son of Easton and Nancy and Gordine.
Son of Easton, Nancy.
Hey,
can you
John.
Hear me, by the way?
I'm sorry?
Can you hear me?
Can we hear who?
Me.
Yeah, it's working out.
Anyway?
It's working out real well. John
Look,
is.
I'm here to talk with Robin. I don't know.
And Sean, me and Son of Vista.
Son of Vista. Yeah, welcome.
Sean, so there's three of you.
There's three of us in a
wow.
second bedroom, which is the only real intimate contact. We like to pretend that it's a radio show, but it's really just three of us in a small little bedroom.
We were in the primary bedroom, but they demoted us. So we're just in the second.
We're hoping to be in a bedroom in Belmont real soon, though. So, you were, and I know that you've received, you know, accolades over the years, but I mean, you really were a pioneer in gender broadcasting and sort of doing a regular weekly radio program that explored all kinds of issues regarding gender, not just transgender, but all forms of gender issue, and bringing it to
were.
I'm sorry?
What do you mean, were?
Well, I mean, when you started it, there was no one else doing it. That's what I mean.
Now, what's your name in
Sarah
Texas?
Sarah DePalma.
Sarah DePalma had a show before Gender Talk by a few months, as I understand it.
I think you were right at the same time when I talked to Sarah. Yeah,
I could have sworn there was somebody who was
Sarah
on
Sarah was co-hosting on a gay show.
And where is she
Sarah
now?
First.
where is she now? That's my point. The victors get to write the history, my friend. You were the first.
She gets to write it because she got out sooner. Just kidding.
But you certainly have.
It's been great doing the show. We've enjoyed it. But there comes a time when you got to stop. You got to move on. And I've got some physical stuff I'm dealing with right now thanks to a car accident.
Two car accidents.
Yeah, and some really, really bad drivers, truthfully. And so it's just a little bit more than I can handle right now, and my money's running out. I did get myself a settlement from the insurance company, but that's running out, and I got to figure out a way to make a living, despite the fact that nobody would ever hire me to work for them.
Well,
so.
We both know that that's not true, and you never have to apologize for needing to back out of doing something that you've been doing for love and not money for all of these years.
Hey, I didn't back out. I got fired. They threw me out.
You need a lawyer?
Right.
But
yeah, you know, it's hard to say goodbye to something like Gender Talk, and it's been the center of it really has been the center of my life for a long time, and Gordine has been such a able partner in doing it, and it is kind of sad to say goodbye to it, but you know what? We both have exciting things that we're working on, and we're not going to disappear, and the Gender Talk website is going to continue to stay current
sure.
and active, and so we got lots of good things.
And we may have interviews. We may actually have interviews up on the Gender Talk website.
Terrific.
Some writing, and the calendar will be updated, and we're both working on some video projects and some separate writing projects, too, which is exciting, so We're raring to go.
I mean, it has become, gendertalk.com has become a focus for the gender community to get information as well as to have access to the program. So there's no reason for that portal to disappear.
No.
We get 15,000 to 30,000 visitors a month.
Wow.
Wow. Which, wow.
You know, if you charged each one a dollar.
That's what I'm trying to figure out, you know? Maybe,
just
maybe
a dollar.
I like it. Robin's starting to think my way.
I do need a business partner in this. You know, if you know somebody who knows how to turn that into just enough income so I can keep doing this work and do it better, that'd be great.
You asked what John DeCoven was doing here. We'll talk, my friend.
Okay,
we'll talk,
John.
My friend. We'll talk. But at the time that you started doing the program, whether you were first or first, doesn't really matter. At the time that you started doing the program, it was a different kind of thing to do. You and I talked on the phone today. There are a number of folks out there who are gender, intergender, transgender, you know, gender fuckhead broadcasters who are doing shows on terrestrial radio, satellite radio, podcasting. And so the landscape has changed. I think you certainly had a lot to do with paving the way, but have you noticed a difference from your own experience behind the mic sort of 10 years ago to the show you did just last week, for example?
Well, we get a lot more respect now than we did then. Back then, we were just, well, first of all, you know, we didn't know what we were doing. I mean, my first guest, you know.
That almost sunk the whole show, right? I mean, that could right away, that could have been the end of the beginning of the end and the end of
exactly.
the beginning.
Exactly. I mean, and for folks out there, my first guest was indeed Robin Goldstein, who I figured was the most competent person and the most interesting person to talk with I could have on. And so, but
if you set the bar, Nancy, if you set the bar low enough,
exactly.
everything else just looks like gold.
But yeah, back then we were just, you know, the oddballs on the block, and but you know, over years we've worked at it as best we could, and now we get, you know, some respect, and but at the same time, you know, it's just a radio show. So,
well, I think though
it has its limits.
It's more than just a radio show, because it's activism in terms of radio and doing community radio, and community radio has always been a bed of activism. And I was just reviewing some of the shows myself, because it's kind of with heavy heart. I mean, we want to keep doing the show, mm-hmm. but we also need to do some other things. And I was just looking and reflecting back on the year and some of the amazing people that we've talked to, like in Kyrgyzstan, Nepal, transgender activists. And we've had a lot of international focus. We've talked to young trans kids who are transitioning in junior high and sometimes before in their families.
And our favorite New Zealander.
Oh, yeah.
Georgina Beyer.
Yep.
The first ever elected to parliament. First transgender
Maori.
Person.
Maori.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the first out trans person elected to national office anywhere.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. She's an amazing person.
And we've had some amazing activists on the show, like Andrea Smith, who is an activist, Native American activist, who just has so much hope in spite of all the kind of atrocities that have happened, and just is really pushing the envelope a lot of ways in terms of rethinking activism and how we do activism.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a lot of stuff on transgender suicides and depressions and how to deal with all that. So those are some shows that just stand out from the last year for me.
And you know, to say it sort of it provides a public service, I think it at some level diminishes what you guys have actually accomplished. Because and you sort of think of, you know, the kind of garbagey Sunday morning, you know, 2 a.m. shows, which, you know, they're obligated to put on. But your show has always been much more about that. First of all, it was entertainment. And that, I think, is one of the things that I've always thought about is, and you know, we all do what we do very differently. But I've always been out. I've always been clear about what I'm doing. And my feeling is, my own transgender identity is a part of who I am, but only a part of who I am, and so it gets figured into the mixture, and people need to be okay with that as we move forward and take everything as a big piece. And I think Nancy was actually instrumental in the whole straight white Buddhist thing, that whole little ramble that I go through.
That's right. I was the one who converted you, right?
Yes, you were. Yes, you were. Well, one of the questions that I have is, you've been doing this over a long enough period of time that you've seen quite literally changes in the political landscape. And I'm wondering if you've observed, while society may be, you say you get more respect now, I think there's obviously been changes both in society and also in the medium, but nevertheless the politics have changed. How do those two things intersect with each other? We've got a more conservative, if you will, social and political structure, and yet people on the whole seem to be a little more open. And
you're referring to asshole Bush?
Okay, sure.
I mean, certainly, yeah, certainly the government has changed, and things have definitely taken a turn for the worse in terms of what it is to be an American and live in America these days. But in terms of being transgender, I think there's much more familiarity. People know what, they've heard the word transgender, and they have some clue about it. It's something about men in dresses or people or transsexuals. Or something, and they understand now that there's male to females as well. I mean, female to males as well as male to females. But in essence, you know, it's still, things don't change that quickly. And I think that, you know, if we had been African Americans fighting for equality, and we started something in the 1860s, and we managed to keep it up for 100 years, at the end of that 100 years, we would still be able to say in the 1960s, racism isn't dead, and some things never change. And I think the same is true. While we've made great gains, while we now have laws, society moves at a very measured pace. Some people's beliefs, I mean, it's hard for any of us to change some of our core feelings about things. And so society's discomfort with transgenderism isn't going to disappear overnight or in a decade. And, you know, we've seen wonderful movement and things have moved forward, and yet we still, you know, there are still rabid hate mongers out there who think that who we are is antithetical to spiritually righteous and healthy living.
Mm.
And so, you know, we are tasked, just as the Revolutionary War in this country did not secure the future of democracy, as we are finding out more poignantly today than I think ever in this country's history, just as democracy is quite threatened today, transgender rights are not secured any more than anyone else's rights are. They are only maintained by continuous effort. And so I think while we've made progress, there's no less need for educational effort and for advocacy.
I think one of the exciting things is seeing what's happening with the younger generations as an educator, and seeing students coming in and being much more aware because of what they've seen on the media, and much more open-minded than they were a number of years ago. And I think that's exciting. One of the things that the Gender Talk website that Nancy has built is that it's used by educators across the globe for gender studies, for all kinds of things, and also for nonprofit groups, not just, you know, academic education. So that's exciting.
I think that's a great point about the young folks, because, yeah, that's a big change from 10 years ago or 11 and a half or whatever since we started the show. Is back then, there wasn't this robust, highly visible population of young folks,
right,
who are asserting their gender freedom. And today they are very much in the lead.
And people who are in their sort of teens and 20s don't seem, at least from my perspective, don't seem to have all of the same hang-ups of people who are in their 40s and 50s.
That's demonstrated by a lot of polling.
Yeah,
oh, is that right? There's polling that demonstrates
there
that?
There is a significant amount of very reliable and respectable polling that has been done that indicates that that there's a great deal of gender liberalism in the younger you get, you
right.
know?
That's right.
And that kind of polling didn't reflect that even 15 or 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
One of the things I've really tried to do with Gender Talk and with my activism, but Gender Talk has been really the focus of my activism, I see the movement as defined by the ideas and the ideals of the movement, and one of the things I've tried to do is to keep it as much as I can, and you know, one person only has so much influence even with a radio show, but I've tried to keep it honest and modest in its claims and in its goals and its ideals, so that so we don't, you know, make of ourselves some huge thing that's going to revolutionize and change everything over, but rather we recognize that, you know, that there are people who are uncomfortable with us, and the world has to be safe for them too, as unappealing as that may sound,
mm-hmm,
to us at times. The world needs to be a safe place for everybody, including people who were raised in environments that were inimical to our existence. And so,
you talking about George Allen?
Yes.
You can say him by name. It's okay.
You know, and
also, he's a Jew. He's a Jew. We didn't know that about him initially, but he's a Jew.
He's a ham-eating Jew.
He's a ham-eating Jew.
Let's not forget that. You know,
watching Jon Stewart.
It's interesting. This whole topic is fascinating to me, and I think that the work you do is incredibly important. My experience just spending time with Robin was incredibly important, because when I grew up, I'm 41 years old, when I grew up, essentially, and, you know, this sounds comic, but there's a really serious component in this.
We'll be the judge of that.
Which part? which half? Transgender issues really came down to, in my upbringing, a matter of unbalanced, mediocre male athletes changing gender in order to get some kind of physical advantage in the female world.
Oh, I've done that.
That's so much easier than, like, just doing steroids or
right.
something.
Right, yeah, exactly. No? Don't juice. Have a whole gender change. but seriously, you know, those were the kinds of issues that seemed... That was the idea that seemed to pervade the whole phenomenon
sure.
in the environment I grew up in. And maybe there was a bizarre kind of theatrical component that was reflected in something like the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
but essentially, these weren't real people living real lives, a broad, diverse group of people trying to understand how they're going to fit in to our American picture.
Right.
And I think that the kind of work that you've done has changed that for a whole lot of people. Has changed that sort of ridiculous stereotyping.
From the mountains to the prairies.
It has.
I will accept that with the caveat that, you know, I am one of a great many people who did that work. And... but that work is to humanize us. I mean,
but you're one of the cuter ones.
When President Clinton spoke, he was the first sitting president ever to speak to an active gay and lesbian organization. He spoke to an HRC banquet, a human rights campaign banquet. And at that banquet, he said, the work that needs to be done is your work, because the work that needs to be done is you being visible and introducing yourselves to other people so that they will know somebody who is gay or lesbian. And the same is true of transgender people. As people get to know us, as we come out more and more, and people get to know us, they see us as people, not caricatures
yes.
that have been painted of us by those who weren't quite so friendly.
Yes. And you have, through the show, you and Gordine and Hal and all of the people that you've had over the years who have been connected with the show... have created those role models for other people, both who identify as being trans and folks who don't. And
you know, Robin, what we tried to do, our rule number one was to have fun, and rule number two was to be ourselves. No bullshit, no dishonesty, no hiding anything. And that's all we did. You know, we just tried to be real. My feeling was that the way we could be surest to give a gift to others would be to represent ourselves honestly, and in so doing, that is what we had to. That's what all that any of us has to give to other people is the honest truth of ourselves. Or I think that's the best that we have to give, and so, you know, that's what we tried to give to others always on Gender Talk.
Are you willing to be real in taking a best of 10 test of knowledge against John DeCoven?
Always.
Yeah. All right.
I don't guarantee to win.
All right, John, leave the room. John.
Okay. Now only no cheating.
Get out of the room, John.
What? I have no idea what this is.
We're gonna play a round of Win John DeCoven's Money. You should know that Nancy went to MIT, by the way, John. You don't have to close the door, John. You can just go.
Did you say John is an MIT-er?
No, you're an MIT-er. Oh, man. I got my money on you. Don't do that. All right.
I hate to tell you, my brain is...
You can use a lifeline there.
Okay.
Gordine can hear us, right?
I'm right here.
All right, here we go. Best of 10 test of knowledge. This is time for Win John DeCoven's Money. It is the Nancy Nangeroni Gender Talk issue. Question number one. What style of facial hair is named for a Union general in the Civil War?
Union general in the Civil War. A Van Dyke?
Okay.
Certainly not a Grant.
All right. We'll take your first answer. Okay. Number two. What pollster founded the American Institute for Public Opinion in 1935?
What's his name? Girlfriend, who's a big poll.
The one that that it's named after.
Right.
I'm not able to even remember.
That's the one.
That's the one.
Who? Yeah. Who? Give me a name.
You need a name. Where's my computer? I should have my computer.
Computers,
Alice. Quick, get on my
All right, number
no cribbing.
Oh, here we go. Question number three. Well, maybe, okay, what is the Latin maxim that the teacher John Keating, played by Robin Williams, encourages his students to follow in the 1989 film Dead Poets Society?
Carpe diem, my friend.
Okay, I like that. Name the French painter who painted the painting at the Moulin Rouge.
I don't know, but Degas sounds like it would be, you know, something along his lines.
All right, so we're going for Degas on that. All right,
this
state is nicknamed the Beehive State.
Oh, I should know that. Is that Kansas? Beehive State. See, I haven't logged in yet.
at least you're an honest son of a bitch.
We'll take that as Maryland.
All right. What was the name of the Cartwrights' ranch on the TV show Bonanza?
Oh, please. Ponderosa.
Okay. Released in
Utah is the Beehive State.
It wasn't Maryland. Go figure.
Released in March of 1971, this album by singer Carole King stayed in the charts for 302 weeks.
Must be Tapestry.
Okay. Bovine means cow-like. Porcine means pig-like. What does lupine mean?
Wolf-like.
All right. Who was David Letterman's very first guest on Late Night in 1982?
Oh.
Who's his sidekick?
No, his sidekick, Paul Schaefer, wouldn't be his guest.
We're going to have, impose a 10-second rule, a Google rule here. I can hear you tippity-typing in the background, Cordine.
Hi, you hear me?
Okay. And finally, question number 10. If a liquid causes a piece of litmus paper to turn red...
Bill Cosby was one
of them. No, it wasn't. Check Google again. If a liquid causes a piece of litmus paper to turn red, what does that mean?
Oh.
You should know that from your chemistry, Nancy.
Yeah, I know. It's either acid or base.
Thank you. Well, you're either right or wrong.
It means you know the pH. I think that
Yeah. We'll say acid.
Well, which
Johnny
one?
Johnny Carson.
Which
was
one is
David
it?
No. David Letterman. Was it Carson?
No!
I don't think so.
It was Maryland.
Maryland, yeah, right.
Yeah, I think it was Degas.
It was Degas.
And the liquid, if it causes the litmus paper to turn red, what is it? It's a...
Well, if you're saying... You're saying it must be a base, then, rather than an acid.
Well, no, I mean, it's an. It's A/N. I'm not giving any clues.
Oh, well, then, what good are you? You're supposed to help me with this.
All right. Give me one. Just choose one.
I said acid.
All right. Acid.
I prefer acid over
All
base.
Right.
Anyway.
Okay. Let's get John to...
choose acid.
Let's get John DeCoven back in here. All right. So, I think she got one...
Alkali.
Two.
That's why I'm basing the same thing.
There you go.
But they're opposite of acid.
Kansas. Alkaloids, my friend. Yes.
Are we getting John DeCoven back in here? Let's see. So how many do you think that she got right?
A lot of laughing.
It sounded like six.
Two, three, four. I got five.
Okay.
I got five.
There's a lot of laughing going on.
I didn't give my important instructions before this.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I want a clean competition.
You need to be on mic here. Okay.
No Google.
There you go.
No cribbing.
No Google, no cribbing.
Yeah.
Okay.
None of my answers came from Google. I mean, yeah, the
what about
Letterman
Yahoo?
Answer, don't take it. That
right.
one came from Google.
All right, so I got Nancy one, two, three, four.
There were a couple
four,
on you.
Five. I got five. I got five for Nancy. I got five. The number to beat is five.
Okay.
Okay, you should know that
Let's
John has
roll.
Been playing this game for how many years have we been playing now?
5 years.
5 or 6 years, and you've won?
Never.
Well, no, you won once.
Oh, yeah, once.
he's so beaten down, he doesn't even remember. All right, here we go.
And we were tried.
There you go.
Okay,
all right, so here we go. We're
going
to we'll start all over again, and the number to beat is five, and we got a couple of tiebreakers here if we need to get to them, which we frequently do. All right, in three, two, one. Wait, that's not the right sound effect. Hold on. I'm all excited here. All right, here we go.
All right, Johnny, my boy. What style of facial hair is named for a Union general in the Civil War?
Style of facial hair.
Yes, say it slowly. That will help you.
I'll Wait, just take a guess.
That'll help you let Gordine Google it for you.
I've got it.
Sideburns.
All right. Did you see this? No.
No.
All right.
I just took a guess.
Such
Colonel
a
Sideburns.
All right. Yeah, that's
I'm
right.
I'm not. Look where I'm looking. I'm looking
yeah,
over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. Answer, in fact, is Sideburns, named for Ambrose Burnside. What pollster founded the American Institute of Public Opinion in 1935?
My dad's name was Ambrose.
Pollster.
1935. Oh, now I know. I should have known.
Well, give it to me.
I
have no idea.
All right.
I know, and we should have
Fox
known.
News?
It's go, ladies, gentlemen, someone?
Gallup.
George Gallup. There you go. All right. What is the Latin maxim that teacher John Keating, Robin Williams, encouraged his students to follow in the 1989 film Dead Poets Society?
Didn't see that movie.
Okay. It is, in
you
fact...
You gotta go see that movie, John. It's a great movie.
Carpe Diem.
Yes. Okay.
Seize the day.
It's a great movie.
Name the French painter who painted At the Moulin Rouge.
I should know this, having a French mother.
Exactly. Mais oui.
Mais oui. Je ne sais pas.
Sure, you can. Go ahead.
No idea. Oh. I'll know when you say the name.
He gave the wrong one.
Sean?
I don't know.
Toulouse-Lautrec.
Oh, Toulouse-Lautrec.
That would have been my second guess.
Henri de la Toulouse-Lautrec. This state is nicknamed the Beehive State. The Beehive State. The Beehive State.
Behaved is right.
It's the Beehive State. Beehive State.
North Dakota.
Nope. It is, in fact, Utah.
Randy Newman wrote a funny song about it.
Yes, he did. What is the name of the Cartwrights Ranch on Bonanza?
Never watched that show.
Get out of here.
No. John.
That's before my time.
Oh, please. It's the Ponderosa. Nancy got it correct.
Okay.
That's cheating, though, because he is 12 years younger than I am.
That's true. Released in March of 1971, this album by singer Carole King stayed in the charts for 302 weeks.
Let's see, I was 5 years old at that time.
All right.
Robin, I think the questions are just slightly slanted.
No, well, he always does that. That's fine. That's part of the panache of this game. Tell me.
So Robin enjoys tormenting you, is that it, John?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Tapestry.
Okay.
Have you heard of it?
No.
You've never heard of Tapestry?
I'm sure I've heard the songs. Why don't we do the next one on rock music from the late 70s, early 80s?
Oh, let's go there.
Okay, we'll do that next time.
Okay.
Bovine means cow-like. Porcine means pig-like. What does lupine mean?
One more time.
Bovine means cow-like. Porcine means pig-like. What does lupine mean?
Cows,
I knew Gordine would get this one too.
Yeah, where do you get these questions, Robin?
Chicken like.
I love that.
That's one mean chicken. It
well,
eats
you
itself.
Got the beef. You got the beef. You got the pork. I figured chicken's the other meat.
the other white meat.
Yeah,
it means wolf-like.
Oh, okay.
Like lupus, right? The mask of the wolf, right? Okay.
I understand.
Sorry. He was David Letterman's first late-night guest in 1982.
This I should know, being I always watched Letterman. George Carlin.
No, that was the first guest on Saturday Night Live.
Oh. Well, do I get half a point?
For remembering the answer from 3 weeks ago? Sure, we'll give you half a point. It was Bill Murray.
Bill Murray. Okay.
Bill Murray.
Who was also his first guest, I believe,
on the CBS show, right?
On the CBS show.
I think that's right.
Right.
And
do I have any chance of winning yet?
No.
Okay.
And finally, if a liquid causes a piece of litmus paper to turn red, what does that mean? It means ask your doctor or pharmacist.
Red. Okay, I forgot. I think I've gone through this with my girlfriends a few times, right?
Right. Righty tighty.
Okay.
No,
red.
Lefty.
Lucy.
What, you're pregnant?
We're going to give him the credit for that one.
Is that it?
We're going to give him credit for that one anyhow.
Oh, God.
No, it means that it's an acid.
Oh, okay.
All right. You guys are terrific. You are a great sport, as always, for playing. Thank you so very much. So the final...
wasn't Ben Stein from Boston? Or no?
I don't know when Ben Stein is from originally.
Okay. Because they don't understand the concept of the show, probably.
Ben Stein?
And now I don't either. At this moment in time, I don't either.
What show was that?
Well, no, because everyone says I sound like Ben Stein.
Not everyone. Not everyone. All right. So the final episode of Gender Talk, at least for this particular instantiation, is this Saturday.
That's right.
And it can be heard on the airwaves of WMBR in Boston. That's 88.3?
Nope, 88.1.
When did you move?
How quickly we forget. The only movement that happened was in your brain, my friend.
that required a doctor's permission slip, by the way.
Yeah.
And people can listen to it on the web. It streams at gendertalk.com.
That's right.
It's available as a podcast on the iTunes Music Store.
Oh, is it on the iTunes Music Store?
It's on the iTunes Music Store. And for $4.95, you'll come to their home.
Yes, $495.
Well,
expenses.
I'll let you guys work that out. Listen, I love you, as you know, and you've been so important in my life along the way in ways that you will never ever understand, and so
and probably don't want to.
No, and. I'm having a moment here. Come on. I'm playing the sad music in the background. You can't hear it, but.
I can't hear it.
I wish you, obviously, all of the best in this and whatever else you do, and you let us know, and people will be able to stay in touch. And my guess is you're not off the air for very long, because I know you, and in many ways you're like me, and you've got stuff to say, and you're going to find a way to say it.
I do have things to say,
and
you know, we're just going to... I'm not making any promises about that right now. We're going to see what the future brings.
All right.
Get well.
Robin, you're an inspiration to me, too.
Thank you.
Thank you for the work that you're doing and for the fun and the laughs and all that good stuff.
And for that schnauzer logic.
Yeah, thanks.
And all of you. You all take care.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Gordine.
Nice
have a
you,
great
guys.
Show on Saturday.
Thank you.
And
give us
gonna,
a call.
And we're going to be talking with you Saturday
yep,
night?
Yep, I'll give you a call on Saturday.
Awesome.
All right, take care.
Take care. Good
bye
night.
Bye. Good night.
All right.
Two car accidents.
I know.
Ouch.
I know. She was talking about that. It's.
I hope she gets well. I hope she gets better.
Oh, yeah. She's strong. She's strong. You know, it's tub thumping. You get knocked down, you get up again. You got stuff to say, you're going to find a fucking way to say it. And that's all there is. And she beat your ass.
Well, yeah, well, that was a given. That was a given.
Well, we got to get up into, like, at least the Blondie era.
All right.
To give him a chance.
Yeah.
We got to take a quick break. We got to come back. We're going to be talking with Eliza Doolittle. No, Eliza Eliza Alfrichtig. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, the John DeCoven. You are such a good sport to be here.
I love
it. You are such a good sport. Did you really know it was sideburns?
No.
I love you. Stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
Impossible to hold.
amid the soft silver sadness in the sky. There came a man of fortune, a drifter passing by. He wore a torn and tattered cloth around his leathered hide, and a coat of many colors, yellow, green on either side. He moved with some uncertainty, as if he didn't know just what he was there for or where he ought to go. Once he reached for something golden hanging from a tree, and his hand came down empty. Soon within my tapestry along the rutted road, he sat down on a river rock and turned into a toad. It seemed that he had fallen into someone's wicked spell, and I wept to see him suffer, though I didn't know him well. As I watched in sorrow, there suddenly appeared a figure gray and ghostly beneath the flowing beard. In times of deepest darkness, I've seen him dressed in black. Now my tapestry's unraveling. He's come to take me back.
Realization is preceded by an immovable faith. He who would in his own person test the fact of God's presence can do so by a living faith.
Welcome back. We're 47 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, John Dukovin, son of Easter, guys.
Son of Easter.
Son of Easter.
You had an interesting conversation going on about Nancy and gender and Gordine during the break.
Yeah.
We need like a little Oprah after show.
We do.
Right.
Continue the conversation going. Join us in the chat room. So we're running long today, so as a result, we're not going to be able to do... This is the week we're not going to be able to play Road Stories.
That's okay, because we'll make it up to Parviz next week by doing two Road Stories.
Excellent.
For his birthday.
But the music, of course, means one thing and one thing only, and that is on the line with us is Eliza Alfricht. Today we're going to do a little realizations from Cambridge, from Harvard, where they know... You can always tell a Harvard woman, but you can't tell her much. Son of East Eliza, welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Hello, how are you?
We're terrific. How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well.
Sorry we got to you late today. Big show and not a long time, but there's a lot going on. You're back in school, and you sent me a list of a whole bunch of things going on this week. Obviously, you've got the whole early admission situation. What's sort of on your mind this week? What's capturing the attention of the kids?
Well, as I was talking about with you before about Harvard has decided they have filed a trademark application for the word Harvard because there were two now Harvard seniors who started a tour group, Harvard Tours, and as a result of this and the fact that they were making lots of money, Harvard has now decided to trademark Harvard.
And what
do you, I mean, from your perspective, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Does the university feel like it, like, does the university feel like it's kind of benevolent and on your side, or do you feel like it's the students against the university?
I think the university in this situation was benevolent. I think a lot of people, they actually, this group, the Hobbit Tours, they asked them to change their name. They're now the Unofficial Tours. But most people didn't even think they would be approved to be a student-run business on campus, and then if they weren't approved, they wouldn't have been able to operate on Harvard grounds, but they were, so that was a surprise. But I guess in terms of university benevolence, they've certainly not been benevolent in their rules on the tailgate, the Harvard-Yale tailgate, which is a yearly tradition going back till quite a long time ago, and this year they decided that no one can bring alcohol into the tailgate.
That brings me to one of my questions. Can I ask a question, Robin?
Of course.
I sound like Parvies.
Of course, Parvies.
I would be curious to know, what kind of drugs are the college kids doing these days?
I'm not, like, personally involved in that, but...
Well
no,
said.
Asking as a reporter of,
right,
the, of
right,
the cultural scene.
Right.
I don't know. I think at Harvard there's not an enormous drug culture, at least in people who I... spend time with. I think in terms of, like, the rich sort of legacy kids, cocaine is rather popular. There was a kid last year who was booted out, but only for, I think, for two semesters. He's coming back for having a really bad LSD trip. But that was a rarity, or at least the fact that it was publicized as a rarity. But you don't hear very much about people and drugs on campus.
So they're better at hiding it at Harvard.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the Leary legacy kids there.
But what about alcohol? I mean, you the story you're talking about, the tailgate, obviously has to do with alcohol, and that is a kind of a drug. Do you experience lots of drinking, binge drinking, too much drinking, not enough drinking?
Well, no, I think that whatever Harvard students don't do in, like, drugs, non-alcohol drugs, they certainly make up for in drinking. People drink all the time here. I mean, people are very studious, but it's sort of the work hard, play hard atmosphere. I mean, you walk up to a party and you'll always see ambulances outside of it.
And that's how you know it's good.
Right.
I don't even go until I see the first EMT response. I don't even bother.
But I think the problem is really that so many freshmen come here, and I mean, in order to get into Harvard, you sort of had to have been a nerd in high school, or at least for the most part, unless you were doing cocaine.
I didn't get
it. But and so all these people who had never drank before come here and just get completely out of control.
And does that last beyond their freshman year, do you think? I mean, it's certainly the freshman year. I was talking to a friend today about the fact that during my freshman year, I was totally out of control, and it came to bite me on the ass, and I eventually settled down, but it wound up hurting my grade point average. Somebody called it HBLC, High Boards, Low Cume. Those are people that did real well on the standardized test, but they partied just a little, wee, too much. But I mean, does it calm down, or is this something that, because I remember when I was in college, for example, the drinking age was 18 in Boston. So mm-hmm. It didn't have this dimension of being forbidden the way I think is it 21 now in Boston, Cambridge?
Yeah, 21. I think that actually is the biggest problem, is that since people really can't, for the most part, drink out in the open. I mean, people are turning 21 generally spring of their junior year, fall of their senior year. That they have, if they want to go out to a party mm-hmm. or a public place and be drunk, they have to binge drink in their rooms or with a very small group of friends, just drink completely irresponsibly, drink like disgusting vodka from plastic bottles. And I think that's really the problem, is the drinking age, in my opinion. And I think that's what will be the problem with this tailgate, is that people are just going to drink too much at 10 a.m. in their dorm rooms, which is just kind of weird.
And it sounds like Cold War Russia. Really?
bathtub gin? Kind
Cold
of
War
potatoes?
Soviet Union, yeah. You know, intimate friends, small places, indoors, just knocking
vodka.
It back.
And complaining about the administration.
Right.
Yep.
And then do a little work at the linear accelerator later in the day.
Now, before you said that Harvard students are known for working hard and playing hard, explain the first part of that idea to me. The working hard part.
What do you mean?
That's what he wants to know.
I think a lot of people would say that going to college is not particularly hard work. I mean, you're kind of just being, you're sitting in a room all day. I mean, disabuse us of that notion. Go.
Well, I think it's true that compared to work that may have some actual, like, importance on the real world, no, this work is not that difficult. But it's incredibly time-consuming. I think, I guess you can really spend as much time as you want on work. Like, my roommates and I are, I'd say, on the more studious side, but we still go out rather frequently. But people, there are people, you could work every hour of the day if you wanted to, and you really have to figure out how much you need to do and how much you want to do to achieve the grades you want. And once you figure that out, I don't know, it's not so bad. But in comparison to my friends at other colleges, it seems like I'm always doing more work.
But does it feel like it's too much, not enough, just the right amount?
I think you can really choose your course load. I think, I don't know, it's really whatever you inflict upon yourself. I personally don't think it's that bad, but I don't know. I'm not...
Because, I mean, there is a theory that if you have a degree from Harvard, when you get out into the, quote, real world, that nobody will really care what that degree is in. So why don't you just make it as easy on yourself as possible and just sort of, you know, get through? Because at the end of the day, I mean, people rarely ask me what I studied at MIT, for example.
Grad school.
No, I think that's definitely true. And I think for a lot of people, I mean, I've heard the phrase thrown around, the only two A's that matter at Harvard are the two that are on your diploma. But I don't know, maybe it's just...
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah.
I just got that. I had to write it down.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny, actually.
You MITers couldn't make that joke.
No.
How does Harvard feel about Bill O'Reilly?
I actually have never watched the Bill O'Reilly show. I don't know how Harvard in general feels about Bill O'Reilly.
We talked about...
Because he's a Harvard alum.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think actually more like...
I'm surprised Harvard he doesn't have a statue there yet.
Yeah, no. There was some Harvard alums who created some magazine. It was actually just in the news today called like 02138, which is the zip code here, about basically what's going on with Harvard alums. And I think... He was listed like 100 most successful living Harvard alums right now, or something like that.
Wow,
that's so sad.
It is sad. It is sad. Well, we were talking about this with Eliza last week. I mean, university is probably more balanced politically now. There's probably a stronger conservative presence on campus than there was when I was in college back in the 70s. Which was a lot closer to the war. I mean, the other war. I mean, the other war. Well, you know, Vietnam War. And so I would be surprised if the students were upset about it at this point. It's funny to me that the issues tend to be sort of social personal issues, like drinking, like whether somebody's making money off of T-shirts, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Do you find that there are, and I've been looking at the Crimson, and it looks like it sort of just carries general kinds of stories. I don't see the kind of rabble rousing anger that I would expect to see in a student newspaper. Is it just I missed the wrong issue, or is it really like that?
No, I think you have it right on. I think that's like a big sort of criticism, not just of Harvard undergrads. It's sort of like my whole generation is that nobody really is taking any action politically. Some people say it's because there's no draft, so no one personally cares. And, I mean, I guess in Harvard specifically, people always talk about this Harvard bubble. I know I mentioned that in my email to you today. When you're here, you really have to make an effort to hear about other things, and I like to do that, but it's very difficult, and I don't know. It's sort of disappointing, I guess.
Well, I mean, you are in Boston. Technically, I guess you're in Cambridge. But do you or the folks that you know, or have you observed that folks kind of get out of this Harvard bubble? Because you don't have to go very far, I mean, to actually touch some real people.
No, I think that people really never leave. I mean, I know when I came here as a freshman, I was like, oh, I'm right in Boston. I'm going to go into the city all the time. And I go in occasionally, maybe like once a month.
It's like a field trip.
Yeah, it's sort of like a field trip, but I don't know. I always call Harvard Square kind of like a Disney World. You can really get everything you want, but it's like while you're in here, it may not. It's sort of fake in a way, but you. I don't know. There's really no reason to leave Harvard Square unless, I mean, except to get out of Harvard Square.
I mean, I don't know if you have a car. If you don't, obviously it makes it a little more difficult to explore sort of the outer regions of the Boston area. But I mean, have you been down to the Cape? Have you been up to Maine? Have you had a chance to kind of get out into Dedham and Needham and Waltham and, you know, sort of get us...
Yeah, I've had a chance to, but not really. I think I've had sort of had an atypical experience. Like, one of my good friends at school lives in Needham, and I went to his house for the Jewish holidays. My boyfriend has a car. He doesn't go here. And so we often go drive around places. He's now living in New Hampshire, so... I get off campus a lot more than other people do.
Gotcha. But that seems to be sort of the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'd say most people rarely leave. I mean, especially, since I live in New York, it's much easier for me to just go home.
Right.
But for other people, they can't just go home or something like that.
All right. Well, thanks for checking in with us this week.
Yep.
All right, we'll talk to you next week, and have a very an easy fast on Yom Kippur.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, you did. Robin, the fact you should have told me she's MOT. You know I'm always curious about that.
Yeah. Okay.
Shana Tova.
All right, Shana Tova.
Okay,
bye.
Eliza, take care. Bye-bye. All right. So we only got about a minute, but you're doing this thing at Tommy Two Tone? No, Jimmy's?
No, Tommy T's.
Tommy T's.
Every Tuesday.
Yes.
Showcase.
Exciting.
8 to 10 comics.
All right.
It's always fun.
All right.
Laughalotproductions.com. Check it out.
Very exciting.
I also have...
Are you doing stand-up tonight, by the way?
Yeah. But there, by the time they hear this, it won't matter.
No, I mean, I may go over there.
Okay,
what time are you going
on
tonight?
That coffee shop in Saratoga.
At Blue
o'clock.
Rock Shoot. 8 o'clock.
And I have the, you'll like this one, Robin, the Meshuggah Comedy Tour, which will be debuting next
Oy
year.
Oy vey!
The Meshuggah Comedy Tour.
And that's going to be debuting next year.
Yes.
Okay. And
all Jewish comics. Oh. What a.
How were you going to find
them? Yeah, exactly. I had trouble putting that one together.
No cliche will be left behind.
So are you now? How much of your time are you spending on comedy at this point versus the other things that you do, or is this your business?
Probably 80%
on comedy.
Yeah, 80%.
So this is your thing.
This is my thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
Well, I want to find out about
go.
That. Well,
we're
I mean, we had a bigger show today than I expected. So
it was whopping. It was 30 pounds a show and a 10 pound back.
Yeah.
Maybe Ken can write a story about a song about that. 30 pound show in a 10 pound bag. Hey, write that down. I got that.
I did want to say when she was mentioning her generation doesn't know that much about what's going on. Remember that whole Hugo Chavez thing from last week?
Sure.
And there's some college kid calling in. He's from Berkeley, and he said Hugo Chavez was from Argentina.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Portugal, right?
They just don't, you know. They don't know what's going on these days.
Venezuela?
Exactly.
Thank you. There was a whole lot of political stuff we didn't get to, too.
It'll still be there next week.
Next
I understand
week.
Politics will continue.
Next week. Well, thank you so very much for sitting
in
today.
Robin.
It's always great
time.
To have you here and have you on mic and to play around to win John DeCoven's money.
Always.
It's laughalotproductions.com.
Exactly.
And
or myspace.com/laughalotproductions.
Okay.
I'm breaking almost the 3,000 mark.
No.
Yes.
See,
friends?
The difference. That's the difference. He knows how to do this.
You know,
I need to take another page out of his lesson book.
Okay.
Plan,
well,
lesson
I can,
plan.
I can show you how to do it.
All right.
I mean, a lot of them are hookers and prostitutes, but, you know, they still count as friends. They actually have a term. It's called a MySpace whore. Have you heard that?
No.
My friends have a disease. Ask me how.
Yeah. He pays me $5 a week to wear the sandwich board. That's
all right.
That.
And Sean, as always, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate it. Hopefully have a chat next week.
Absolutely.
Okay. Until then, I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. I miss you both. Parvis, get your ass back here,
Happy
my friend.
Birthday.
It is www.schnauzerlogic.com, robin@schnauzerlogic.com. You can send questions to parvis@schnauzerlogic.com or call us and leave comments and questions on the phone number. It's area code 206-666-6540. Until next week, show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. If I already said that, I said it again. Can't say it enough. I love you guys. Take care. Have a great week. See you next week. Bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over.
Go home. Go.
I'm in my vagina.